Hi everyone, this is Lit Radio Podcast and I'm your host, Thea. Today we will be speaking with Miles Downey and Ian Harrison about their first book together, The Enabling Manager, and their management model, A Wine and Enable. Miles Downey is one of the world's leading practitioners and thinkers in business coaching and is the author of the international bestseller Modern Effective Coaching. Ian Harrison is an executive coach and former church minister. Their book, The Enabling Manager, is a practical, modern read for managers and leaders at any level and in any department or company who need to know how to get the best from their teams in a 21st century business world. Thank you very much, Ian and Miles, for joining us today on Lit Radio Podcast. So my first question for you is, could you share a bit about yourselves and how you became so passionate about the subject of management? So Miles, let's start with you.
Well, I've been in the world of coaching and leadership development for more than 30 years. It started with reading a book called The Inner Game of Tennis by a guy called Tim Galway. And I was a competitive tennis player, and still am, I think. And it was an absolute revelation in terms of what it said about how people learn, because he makes a distinction between teaching and learning. And the distinction is that we suggest that we have an internal learning mechanism that seems to be forgotten about when you get into formal teaching. That turned everything I thought about how people learned and how people performed to the best on its head. And I was studying architecture at the time. I completed the course. I worked in an office, but then I thought, actually, this inner game stuff is far more interesting. So I trained in that. And what I discovered was that the absolute joy of working with people where they start taking responsibility, where they start developing themselves because it's interesting, where we are investing in their autonomy, and that's for me is the absolute heart of it. Is that if is to create conditions in which people can thrive and can kind of step into their own authority, their own autonomy, rather than do what we do, which is to suppress people. So when that became something in the world of work, then the world of work really didn't quite like what I was saying at first. And because there was a fear that people would become irresponsible and just go off and do their own thing. So for me, the whole thing of command and control and moving to align and enable has been a journey of 30 plus years. And it's driven by that absolute delight in seeing people take responsibility, stand in their own shoes and thrive.
And you, Ian?
There was a point where I looked back on the various things I've done and realised that everything was all about people. And what fascinates me then is how people turn up in their various contexts and how they relate to one another and how those contexts affect the way they relate to each other. My early career, I suppose, was in the church. So essentially the voluntary sector. And there the interesting challenge is that if you're going to get anything done, you're relying on volunteers. And so if you don't get that right, they just don't turn up and nothing happens. And it became really interesting to me as to, okay, so that's about motivated people doing stuff that's meaningful for them and turning up and doing it with energy and passion. And so how do you translate that into the workplace? And what would the workplace look like if you were paying volunteers, for want of a better way of putting it, about them turning up and doing what they do best for the cause to achieve the objectives? As I then sort of moved into this world of working with businesses around leadership and around employee engagement and working with Miles, the whole thing ties together into align and enable. And just making work a place where you turn up, even if you weren't being paid, might be pushing it a bit too hard. But
as a former Irish Catholic and a compliant one at that, the notion that the church might be seen as a voluntary organ in the voluntary sector is really very entertaining.
We maybe had a different experience.
Yeah,
already,
but, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, that's fascinating. And then let's speak about the book, The Enabling Manager. So firstly, what motivated you to write that book?
It was about time to write another book. It is one part of it. But also that it was an emerging sense as we were working through the pandemic and seeing workplaces and people in workplaces change. The real clarity that stuff that I'd been teaching for many, many years, namely how a manager might adopt the coaching as part of the way in which they manage and lead others, just crystallized. And so it's part of what I was saying earlier, part of what Ian was saying earlier. It's about creating the conditions in which people can thrive. And for me, that's, for some very strange reason, maybe being brought up an Irish compliant Catholic, that seems to me to be very important.
And for you, Ian?
And for me, it was a model that had stood out in Miles's first book. So I'm going to make Miles feel a bit old now. Back in the noughties when I was retraining and getting some qualifications around coaching, Effective Coaching was a book we were all told we had to read. And
you still should.
Yeah, absolutely. And within that, there's this idea about lead, manage, coach, and Miles. And then eight to 10 years ago, Miles and I found ourselves working together and we began to have lots of conversations around that model because of that thought process Miles has described about how do you meaningfully weave coaching skills into a management role without giving the impression you're expecting the managers to become just coaches, for want of a better way of putting it.
So, yeah, and there was, you know, in all those workshops over all the years, that was the, you know, the manager who'd come to this workshop and learn the coaching thing would say, this is all very well, but, you know, I'm not a coach and I don't want to be a coach. And we had some good answers for that. But it wasn't when we understood we'd always understood, but it wasn't when we got, until we got really, really clear. And it's not just that. It's actually lead, manage, coach. It's the three things, the why, the what, and the how, lead, manage, coach. And those together do an extraordinary thing. When those three things are clear, when a team member knows why they're doing something, what exactly it is that's expected of them, and has clarity about how they're going to execute and own that, how they're going to execute, then the conditions in which people perform to their best, the conditions of flow, most of them are present. So people enter a deeper state of flow in the place of work, or at least that's possible should they so choose.
Absolutely. And then we already touched a little bit on that, but the Enabling Manager is actually a management model. So could you describe that model for us? So do you, Ian?
So the model is, as Miles has said, made up of those three areas. And these are verbs, not nouns, lead, manage, coach. So we're not talking about being a leader, being a manager, being a coach. We're talking about things that managers need to do. They need to lead. They need to provide the why, to give their teams a sense of why they're doing the work they're doing, what's important about it, what makes it meaningful, of what is expected of them, the objectives for the team, and the practicalities, if you like, of working together. And then the to coach so that they understand how, and all built on that foundationship then of good trusting relationships. So I think that's...
Yeah, so that's sort of lead, manage, coach, and then on the foundation of relate.
Yes.
Yeah. And the bit in there that's kind of where there's a difference is in that thing of coach. Because the models that we see traditionally of coaching, you go to your local golf center or your tennis center or wherever, you might see people coaching. What you'll see is somebody who knows, the coach, telling somebody who doesn't know what to do. And that's not our model. Our model says that person who's learning has an in built, inherent learning capacity. That's how they learned how to walk and how to talk. They weren't taught to do those things. They learned. So there's a distinction between teaching and learning. And what a good coach is able to do is to access the individual's capacity to learn. And that's transformative, because you're empowering them implicitly. The acknowledgement that comes from that and the sense of satisfaction and, dare I say, joy that comes when people are well coached is utterly transformative. And if that happens in the workplace, then engagement changes, enjoyment changes, performance changes.
I think it also, the other thing for me is that it adds, people feel valued. So
yes,
you employ people with a skill set, you welcome them into your team, and then when you use that coach piece of the model, you implicitly say, I trust you, I trust your knowledge, I trust your skill set. How are you going to do this? How are we going to do it? Whereas if you've ever worked for a manager who has told you how, it undermines that value, that sense of being valued. It undermines that sense that this person has confidence in me and my abilities. And so that's a really important piece of the puzzle for me, of it. It just enables people to feel valued for what they bring to the table. We have great fun in a course we run on the tennis court, which sort of
the whole course doesn't take place on the tennis court, just one morning.
But that morning on the tennis court is just great fun. Miles is probably better able to explain it than me, but it, just watching people go through this exercise.
So what that's about is that, you see, the promise of the morning on the tennis court is that by the end of a 2.5 to 3 hour session, you will coach somebody else. But of course, nobody who comes on that program as a participant has any idea how to coach tennis. So they can't teach. So they have to change their approach and help the person that they're supposed to be coaching access their capacity to learn. And it's absolutely revelatory, because you can see people struggling with the way they've been taught and their expectations that are laid upon them, and then finding this new way of doing things. There's another piece about this, which is another way of looking at it, which for me is kind of probably the most important part of it. It's the question of where the authority sits. So in most organizations, the authority sits with the chain of management. The more senior person has the authority and can therefore instruct, direct, tell, abuse in worst cases. But what we're trying to do is create a shift where the authority sits with the individual. So that's what the coaching is about. So the lead and manage, that's when the team manager, the team leader, has invested in them the authority of the organization to say, this is your role to ensure this clarity, to hold people to account. So they have the authority at that time. But then when they get into the coaching piece, the authority switches to the person who has to do the task. And so I got interested in that. So I have a brother who's a Latin scholar. And I rang him up. I said, you know, this word, authority, what's its origin? He said, well, it's octum. I said, okay, it's octum. It means to cause, to grow, or to create, or to produce. And I thought, oh, my God. Because that was when it came to me. So you see, that when we've just written the book, and we've signed a contract with Martin, your colleague, that says, read this kind of a book. But Martin leaves it at that. You know, he doesn't then tell us what to write. That's within our gift. That's within our authority. See, so author and authority have the same root. You author something, you produce something. And the joy of the enable model is the enable function. It's about investing in the authority, the capacity to create of your team members. Now what happens is their performance shoots up, leaving you free to focus on higher order tasks, more strategic things, more long-term things. and stop worrying.
I like the way David Marquette describes that within, in the book, we took some time to look at how even within a military context, there's a movement away from command and control to what we describe as align and enable. And David Marquette, ex-US Navy submarine captain, talks about how historically those on the ground have passed information to those above them in authority, who then made decisions. And he says, whereas now that the whole table is turning, so that authority flows towards those who hold the information. So those on the ground who know are given that authority to act on what they know. And I think that's a beautiful way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think what you just described shows that the wine and enable method is really the best method to use at the moment. It's just obvious that staff morale is increasing. And satisfaction as well. But something that I read in the book that I think is really interesting is that you're saying that with the new generation entering the workplace, the expectations of employees towards the workplace and towards the employer are shifting. So could you describe how they're shifting?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and one way I've been processing it is through my grandfather. So my grandfather was born 1910s, towards the end of the First World War. He left school at 14, became a butcher's boy. In his early 20s, he went to war himself. He came back from war, went into a manufacturing context, and worked his way up to shop floor manager. He had very little education, wasn't particularly wealthy. He was brought up from the word go, that there were people above him who would tell him what to do, and he would do that. But then, even during his lifetime, things were changing. So by the time you get to my parents' generation, and then to my generation, and even more so in the generations that followed, there's increasing prosperity, there's increasing education, and there's a decreasing sense of a willingness to respond to that authority figure who tells you what you should or must do. And there was a lot of fear, wasn't there, around millennials and Gen Z in articles written. But I think actually what the pandemic has shown us is something, I think it was William Gibson said, the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. But the changes we're seeing in the workplace now were coming. You can look back and see them coming. The pandemic has served to distribute those changes much more evenly, and now it's not just the millennials generation or the Gen Z who are looking for that autonomy and that sense of being trusted and valued and doing meaningful work. There are people, older people in the workforce, who are looking and thinking, well, actually, I've had a little bit of that during the pandemic, and I quite liked it. So I think there's been that progression through the generations. And I think that's the massive change we're now learning to manage in the workplace, or having to learn to manage in the workplace.
So, and one way of thinking about it is to say that rather than the millennials and Generation Z being a problem, they were actually, and still are actually, showing the way. That actually what they're asking for are things that will make the workplace more productive, more engaging.
Absolutely, I think it's very interesting to see that shift in the generation's expectations towards the workplace, and I think that's a very interesting part of the book. All right, so my next question is, what are the key activities that every team leader should be proficient at? So, Miles, let's start with you.
So, in a way, it's very, very simple, and that's, hopefully a good model is simple. Lead, manage, coach. Those are the activities that you need to engage in. Lead is about making sure that each of your team members understand what the overarching objectives, mission are, and how their role and activities fit within that. It's about creating that alignment between the overarching objectives and mission and what is meaningful for the individual team member. And that's worth investing time in. So it's, those are conversations you have with people. And then the manage is about what a person does. That's about, one, making sure that what they do is aligned with the overarching objective. But then it's really about two things. It's about clarity, that a person knows what success looks like and what's required of them, expected of them. And secondly, not just leaving it there, but holding them to account to that. And that's something that we're not always great at, particularly in the kind of the Northern Hemisphere. But it's absolutely vital that people know that they will be held to account to their promises. And then the third element, the coach element, is what we've been talking about. It's about investing in enabling, empowering your people, helping them do the thinking for themselves, helping them come up with the creative ideas. So lead is about why, manage is about what, and coach is about how I do it. And then
the final piece, yeah, the sort of foundational piece, if you like, that sits underneath all that is the ability to build strong relationships.
So relate, yeah.
Yeah. That need to be trusted, be trusting. It's always an interesting question. If you ask a group of people, which comes first? Do you trust somebody first, or do they prove themselves trustworthy first? Of course, it's not a simple answer, but in my book anyway, unless you start by trusting somebody, they never get an opportunity to prove themselves trustworthy. And surely if you've signed an employment contract with them, you've implicitly said you trust them to some extent. So really important to build that foundation of relate. So lead, manage, coach, relate, and to build on that. There's an interesting piece in that was observed during the pandemic, that there was a huge uptick in the sales of spy software. So instead of trusting people because they're now at home, lots of businesses resorted to putting software onto the laptops of their staff so that you could, at any time from their home, their own home, the manager could see what they were doing. I'm told there were even some versions of this software where the manager could forcefully turn on the webcam on a laptop to see whether the person was actually sat in front of their computer. And of course, all that does is destroy trust. It destroys relationship. And it might feel like being simpler than building a strong, trusting relationship, but ultimately it's counterproductive.
Yeah, and I can hear some people maybe listening to the podcast, maybe not listening to this podcast, but you know, hearing what we're saying and kind of screaming, but you know, if you don't do that, people will just goof off. And I'm sure there are lots of people who did goof off during the pandemic, and maybe even still are. But it's kind of like we're starting in the wrong place with that, because my best guess is that they actually weren't being held to account. So manager, you know, if you're concerned that people will just goof off, hold on, look at your own behaviors. Have you built that trust-based relationship? Have you engaged with those people so that they really have clarity about what they're doing? Are you ringing them on a weekly basis saying, how are you doing? How are you against these commitments? And very quickly, you'll transform those relationships and the level of productivity and the level of engagement and the level of enjoyment, because all that shit goes away. Mm. So I can hear those voices, but take a different perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I think the pandemic was a real obstacle for both employees and employer to build that trust and then keep it between them. But what does it really take to get your team to be the most effective and productive it can ever be? Ian, can you start with you?
So I think it is back to lead, manage, coach. And the things we've been talking about, it's about building trust. It's about getting real clarity as a team leader about what the objectives of your team are. Because it's really easy for a poor manager to hide behind the fact that actually they're not clearly communicating to their team what's expected of them and what the objectives are. Getting clear on the contribution of each individual team member. Again, how can you hold somebody accountable if you haven't clearly communicated to them how they are being expected to contribute? And then, of course, the final piece is the how piece. Those conversations that enable the team members to work out how are they going to do this.
Well, I'm struck by when I'm listening to this is that something like 71%, I think that was the number, of people who are given a job of managing others for the first time are given no training. And it's like, it's almost like sending a teacher into a classroom without having been through teacher training college. It's just daft and it's destructive. So understanding what you need to do, I mean, the amount as a coach working with senior people and very, very senior people and drawing out the lead, manage, coach, relate model for them on a sheet of paper and then kind of going and the dawning realization that this is intuitively correct is kind of shocking. It is simple and pragmatic and in the moment of every day.
Absolutely. How can you communicate clearly with your employees? Because we touched on that. So to be able to get your team to be the most effective it can be, you have to communicate clearly with them. But how do you do that, especially now when many people are still working online and remotely? How do you really communicate?
Well, it kind of comes out of what we've just been said about things that, you know, when you go into organizations and ask people questions like, who amongst this group of people has given feedback recently? You know, a large group of people. You see all the hands in the room go up, and then you go, so okay, great. So who in this room has received feedback? And you see two or three hands go up. So there's somebody sitting in the basement who's incredibly wise because they've received all this feedback, and it's just one person, or somebody isn't telling the truth. So there is a dearth of good communication, of this lack of clarity just all over the places. People, unbelievably, don't hold regular meetings with each of their team members. It's seen as kind of being kind of unnecessary intrusion in being productive. It's vital. So actually, the part of that's important about this is establishing a rhythm and a pace with your people. There are no rules to it. So, you know, in some organizations, it needs to be weekly. I know people who do many conversations on a daily basis about what people are about. You know, so if somebody new in an organization with a complex or difficult task, you might want to meet with them more regularly. Or it can be every 2 weeks or even once a month. But there needs to be that moment where you sit down with your people and you do a number of things. You have the lead conversation, the manage conversation, and the coach conversation, and the relationship conversation. In whatever mix, at whatever moment in those meetings. And it has to be regular, consistent rhythm and pace appropriate to your environment. This is going to occur as a slight deviation. I was blessed with a stepdaughter. And I remember once when she was quite young, I asked her to do something or told her to do something, and I got the response was, "You're not my daddy." It's like, fair enough. True. So that was that. And then it took me a little while and a very good therapist to work out, no, but I do have some parental responsibilities. I need to act on them. And that was a bit later on down the road where my stepdaughter was growing up and kind of testing the boundaries. So I started managing the boundaries a bit better. So prior to my working that out, there'd been much more friction and disruption. I mean, not to any bad or degree at all, just in case she ever listens to this. But what was extraordinary was once the boundaries became clear, the number of disputes, arguments, upsets reduced by 90%. So it's just the same thing. If you would get that rhythm and pace right of regular meetings, lead, manage, coach, relate into the workplace, lots of it disappears kind of overnight. And people try, if they've got it, something they're upset about or a complaint, whatever else, if they know that in a week's time I'm going to sit down with my manager and we'll have that conversation, I can get on with it.
And I think the new a way in which far more people are working in hybrid contexts just means you've got to be even more deliberate about this.
Yes.
Yeah, because there were good managers who had teams who were based in an office who sort of did some of this stuff naturally without thinking about it. So they naturally built the relationships. And it just sort of happened as they met people and had these sort of ad hoc conversations. Because once you've moved to a team to hybrid, those ad hoc conversations are far fewer and further between. So I think the new situation means you've just got to be all the more deliberate about building those relationships, about having that lead, manage, coach. Miles' story reminds me of an objection I get regularly when I'm working with teams, is about a manager will say, I haven't got time to all this coach stuff because I have a queue out of my door of people waiting to talk to me. And of course the answer is, well, they wouldn't be there as often if you had the coach conversation with them, because you would enable them and empower them to think for themselves, to come to their own decisions. And they'd be, if they talked to you at all, they'd be sticking their head around the door saying, this has happened, I've thought about it, this is what I'm going to do. Okay, great. And they've gone and the queue disappears. But you've just got to take that step of deciding to be deliberate about this lead, manage, coach in order to see the queue disappear. There's a little bit of bravery, I think, about that, stepping into the new and just believing, but it will happen.
Yeah, and of course it can be done by Zoom. You don't get to do things by face-to-face.
Absolutely, and I think that really shows how important effective communication is, and that's probably one of the most important skills for the manager. But we already discussed, and Miles, you shared very interesting statistics that more than 70% of managers are given teams to lead without even being trained how to lead. So could you let us know, how can a leader develop and then improve those skills that are so much needed to lead a team?
So yes, you need to learn those skills and being good at them. But if you graft those skills onto something that's kind of not solid or a little bit rotten, a bit like kind of when you have a fruit tree, you have the rootstock, which is something that you know will thrive in that soil, and then you graft on whatever it is, the particular kind of apple or fruit, onto that solid rootstock. That in the same way, you can't just graft these skills onto a leader who has no sense of themselves. So you need to take a step back. And Warren Bennis, who is, you know, an American and kind of some people consider to be one of the greater people on leadership development, he says something to the effect that the process of becoming a leader is synonymous with the process of becoming oneself. So there's a requirement to really understand who you are as a leader, and the greater clarity you have about your unique leadership identity, the more you'll step into it, the more you'll use that as a tool and as a strength. I did some very interesting work with a woman who was quite senior in a group of in a particular organization. I'd be careful about not revealing any identities. And when we first had the conversation about who she was as a leader, it was all about being nurturing and caring of her team and people like her, all of which was true. But when I asked her the question, which was, hold on, what do people come to you for? It took her a while to work it out, but what people wanted from her was her strategic insight, was her vision for what this part of the organization could do. And it was completely different to what she thought her strength was. And of course, being a woman in a man's world, it's often difficult to inhabit your strength, particularly if it's something that men think they're good at. So she'd been kind of suppressing that part of herself. And as she let go of that suppression and let herself... So the first thing is get real clarity about who you are as a leader, what that looks like, what your unique individual genius is as a leader. And from there, then you graft on the skills that will now produce fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that whole piece of just being comfortable in your skin, I mean, you know, find a leader that hasn't, or at whatever level who hasn't experienced a sense of not really belonging in their space. And everyone else around them has confidence in them, but they have all these questions and that need just to inhabit your own space, and sometimes a space other people can see.
Yeah,
as you said about what do they come to you for?
Yeah,
other people can see this.
Yeah,
and step into that space and own it. But it's a journey, and I think that's the interesting thing about the Warren Bennis quote. Is that
it's a process.
It's a process. That this isn't a journey you ever arrive at a destination, because we all develop and grow and our identities shift as life happens to us.
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. And then my final question to you is, so from your experience, can you share with us some examples of leaders who really did it right and can be a good example of great leadership and management?
There's one individual that comes to mind. I mentioned that in my last answer, that lady who suddenly understood who she was, it wasn't sudden, but understood who she was and acted from that. That's such a powerful example. But another was a man who had a senior job in a broadcasting organization, not the famous one, another one, but very senior job, and he was very clear that one, he wanted to progress in the organization, so that was motivating. But he realized that until his team upped their level of performance, he was going nowhere, because he couldn't leave that vacuum. So he got clear about who he was as a leader, and what became clear in that process was that he was actually profoundly interested in the welfare of his team, and he hadn't ever really acknowledged that before. He was working in a series of quite aggressive, masculine environments. But once he got it, then he started acting on it. What it actually then culminated in him and his team doing a series of two-hour workshops with me, in which they learned the lead, manage, coach model, and critically the skills of coaching. And what happened next was the bit that told me that the change had happened. And I was the facilitator. Our friend was the guy who was leading this, because they had a conversation at the end of the third workshop we did, which he led, and said, "So how do we take this further?" And the group said, "I think we need to teach the next level down these skills." So I was kind of saying, "Oh, great, more invoices." And then what became clear to my equal delight was that actually they meant we should teach. So they looked at me and said, "Miles, can you run another workshop in which you train us to teach the next level down?" And not only did they do that, they actually taught the next two levels down. And so what he'd done was, with calmness and clarity and foresight, he really had enabled about 60 people to come to work and to work joyfully and productively.
What's your example, Ian?
For me, the example that stands out is a mid-sized construction firm that found itself in new management, much younger management, and the two blokes in charge, if you like, in the most senior positions, absolutely bought into the idea of valuing their people, giving their people a good experience at work, and the fact that they were there to make the machine, to enable everybody to do what they were good at, and that they had real clarity on the fact that I don't know how to do most of what our company does. So why would I tell anybody to do anything? And they implemented a culture that just began to live this out. And in the construction industry, I think why it stands out to me is it's not the place you would expect to find this culture. And I'd like to say that I was involved in training it or persuading them or convincing them. I wasn't. It was a company I just enjoyed spending time with these two men who had such a passion for the people who worked for them. And an example they gave was a plasterer on a job had been sent out to do a relatively simple job. He'd started the job and he discovered that the plaster on the wall adjacent or something like that was loose. And so he'd rung the office and said, this is what has happened. What should I do? And the two guys in the office said, well, you're the plasterer. What's the objective here? Well, the objective is to leave this room looking really good. Okay, so as the plasterer, what should you be doing? Well, if it was down to me, I would just take all this plaster down and replaster the whole thing. And we said, well, then you're the plasterer. Absolutely. Get on with it. And you could feel in just spending time in the building that people felt trusted. They felt enabled. And to find it in that particular industry was just a joy. So that would be my example that I often enjoy thinking over.
Thank you very much for sharing those examples. I think they will be very inspiring for anyone who's listening to this podcast. And thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
It's a pleasure.
It was great to speak with you, and I hope this conversation will be useful to many leaders and managers. And of course, they can buy the book for even more useful information.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.